passe un super artiste, super encore un but sensationnel. That's a brilliant bit of follow-up play by Mahé. Oh my goodness me, what a shot!
Sagosen, Sagosen setter det hen! Han setter den! De I semifinale igjen!
Hello everyone and welcome to the Uninformed Handball Hour. Chris O'Reilly here, joined by Alex Kulesh. Alex, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Chris. Doing fantastic.
That's great. I have a feeling I know why. And it's not because of the handball going on right now, but that could also be a part of it, which we're going to speak about today. Later on, we've got an interview with Daniela Vekic, journalist with the EHF and IHF. She's going to join us to talk about the Women's Champions League. The first leg of the playoff round was just played over the weekend and some really interesting results coming out of those. We'll speak about those with her and a couple of other hot topics as well in both the men's and women's handball world. But first, Alex, I've got a question for you. In our distinguished handball careers, what's the largest crowd you've ever played in front of, do you think?
Maybe 500? Did we ever get to that? Maybe 200?
Probably against Georgia, probably got into the thousands.
Oh yeah, could have.
Into the four figures, yeah. Yeah, so there's been pressure moments, some with crowds, some without crowds. But you took it to a whole new level, Alex, and it wasn't on the handball court, but it was on the basketball court.
I can't believe it, but I've peaked as an athlete at the age of 31. It really, you know, they tell you that's your prime years in handball. But this time around, it was the basketball court, and not just any basketball court. It was the TD Garden Arena, the Boston Celtics home court, where I was plucked out from a crowd of 20,000 spectators to perform the halftime show.
Incredible. And we're going to do a little watch along and commentary here. And we're going to post the video on the Humble Hour account. But if you want, you can also follow Alex on Barca Kulesh on Instagram, where you'll find it at the very top of his feed. And there's a picture, first of all, and then we'll swipe, Alex, to the video in the second section and take us through it. I see you haven't got your phone ready. Is it because you already know every single second of it inside out?
I may have rewatched this video at least 100 times today.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie. I'll give a bit of a backstory.
Yes, give us the backstory first.
We're sitting up in the rafters, section 330, right at the top, in the game between the Boston Celtics and the Detroit Pistons. And I get a tap on the shoulder, and there's a cheerleader and one of the kind of staff that come over to me and say, do you want to go on the court and do some layups at halftime? Where I immediately exploded and was like, yes, please. I signed a contract that I didn't read at all. My hand was shaking as I was signing this contract. Barely could remember my phone number. Got really excited. And they told me, you know, come down to this area 5 minutes before halftime. And I went down there. Was really like nervous that I'd kind of missed my opportunity, that I'd go to the wrong place. I had two friends along who were accompanying me, and we were like standing in this tunnel. One of them was like at the top of the tunnel. I was in the middle, and another person was at the bottom. But eventually I was picked up. I was getting nervous because they said, you know, come down 5 minutes before halftime. But what I thought they said was that you'll be on the court in the last 5 minutes of halftime. So there I was standing like beside the court, and the clock ticking down on the Jumbotron, and it's like, oh, it's 8 minutes. Shouldn't I not be on the court very soon? When she did pick me up, and I was brought down courtside, and we had a run through. So part of the game, of course, it's not just layups. You know, that was advertised as layups. So I was like, yeah, I can do some layups. But I came down and they had a massive burger made up of five different components, a heavy plastic one that I had to put together during my free throws at the timeout. And we had a run through. There was a team of like 8 people who were accompanying me. Okay. You know, I've worked at EHF events. I have been on the court of a 20,000 arena, 20,000 seater arena. But yeah, that.
But not the with at least a quarter of them watching you.
Exactly. And so we had a run through, and then I was standing kind of courtside watching the game. They're like, oh, yeah, it's the next timeout. And then the timeout just wouldn't come. No one was taking a timeout. So I was standing there courtside, barely watching the game, just telling coach, you know, timeout coach, for almost the whole third quarter before I finally got brought onto the court. And that's where the video begins.
Let's go into the video then and take us through what's going on here.
So the rules of the game being described, so I had 35 seconds to make 4 free throws, and each time I would have to gather a piece of a Big Mac burger, because I'm sponsored by...
Oh, look
by...
at the crowd work, the crowd work, I love it.
So start off with a beautiful layup, and actually they told me not to get the ball, and immediately I tried to get the ball, but picked up the burger... second layup, a beauty. Actually, my best one yet. And me and Lucky, Lucky the Leprechaun, putting away this burger, had a very specific, it had to go patty, burger, patty. And then fatigue must have set in, because on the fourth free throw, after a perfect attempt, I had 2 missed attempts at that before I got it in.
Ah, but you rushed for it. You rushed for the rebound.
Rushed for it.
I love it. And there he is. Glorious.
And it was
biceps in the air.
32 seconds completed in that safely in the 35 second mark, and my section 330 got
the crowd went wild.
Big Macs for the whole section. The crowd went wild. And it was watching back that video as well, you could actually hear the crowd getting excited when I hit the third one. I was like, oh, the crowd's, I could feel it. And then the fourth one, it added a little bit of tension, I think. You know, it would have been too easy to just do it. But retrospectively, I do think that I should have done something really fancy for the last one, you know, taking like a long shot or something, really showed off.
Yeah, instead you went... you had sweaty hands there. With the first one, you took your dribble and everything was legal. Then you went into handball mode, you know, 3 steps before the layup until the last one. And then you went for 2 steps. There were 2 long, long steps, and that might have got your rhythm out of sync. But excellent work, Alex. Winning Big Macs for the entire section. I mean, what a heroic performance that was. And the only way is up. 31. And... Still some hops in there, and some handles.
Barely any hops. But I, the Celtics were winning by about 30 points in the fourth quarter. So I was waiting for that call up. Maybe the coach Mazzulla would give me the shout.
Garbage time, you know. Hey, this guy, he can do a layup. excellent stuff. Oh. So let's dive back into the handball then. And in our morning club, we'll have talked about the qualification tournaments for the Olympic Games. So we won't talk too much about that now. We save it for the morning club. So if you're not a member on Patreon, on patreon.com/handballhour, then head on over there, sign up for as little as $3 a month in our Empty Net Club. You can also join the 6-meter club or the 9-meter club and enjoy that review of the Olympic Games qualification tournaments. Our focus here for this podcast is on the Women's Champions League and the playoff round. And we had the first leg games over the weekend, in which there were 3 victories for the away teams, with Brest beating FTC in Hungary 30-28, CSM Bucharesti beating Krim Ljubljana in Slovenia 30-24, Vipers Kristiansand beating DVSC in Debrecen by a single goal, 29-28, and Bietigheim, the only team doing the business for the home sides, beating IKAS 29-27 in Germany. So we'll dive in to all of those games with our guest today, Daniela Vekic. Daniela Vekic, welcome back to the podcast. How you doing?
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me again. I'm fine, actually. Well rested after a few weeks of rest and break from handball.
Nice. Diving straight back into it after your holidays then. And yeah, we brought you on mostly to talk about the Women's Champions League playoffs. The first leg happened over the weekend, and I hope you've had a chance to catch up on some of them, at least, before we dive into.
That was my comeback to handball. I worked on Saturday.
Okay.
So I'm still catching up, but it's good, it's good.
What was the most interesting game of the playoffs for you?
I have to say maybe Brest FTC in Hungary. I really thought that FTC will win that game, but it was really a tough fight until the end. I really liked that match. The other game that I was watching on that day, Krim versus Chesena, was not that exciting. So
it's interesting because with FTC, they just had that big cup win against Győr in Hungary. A lot of momentum. They've been pretty disappointing in the Champions League this season after a very impressive route to the final last year. Kind of did expect them to kick on, but they just qualified. They were in, you know, sixth place in Group B, just 1 point ahead of Rapid Bucharest, so really scraped in. And they're playing quite a very impressive Brest team, a team that's been unbeaten since October across all competitions. And, you know, despite all of that, it was a really close game. Why did you think that FTC were going to win that game?
I mean, when you compare FTC from the start of the season, when they had a really bad start with all those defeats, Coach Albertsen getting fired and all that, they really kind of get together again, and they've been climbing through and they've been fighting for, you know, to be among the best after EJ Final Four last season. And I remember I talked with Ragana Cvic in, I think it was October, and she said, "Don't write us off yet. We can still make it to the Final Four, and we believe in ourselves." And I really think that with Andrea Lekic back in the squad, they really showed that fighting spirit that they can. But maybe in those last 10 minutes, maybe 5 minutes, crucial moments of the game, Brest defense was super hard, and they started to make mistakes. And I had a feeling like they won themselves in that game, in playoffs. Mm-hmm. So maybe, I think that they are capable of more, but they still didn't show that this season, maybe even up until now.
The FTC team that, you know, last year went at a similar situation, less dire at the end of this leg, a first leg, but a similar situation against a French team last year in the quarterfinal, beating Metz away by 7 to turn that one around, which was really like the miracle of the season. So showing that in this competition in particular, it feels like anything is possible in the away legs. But let's give Brest a bit of credit, I think, because it's such a... I mean, it's a team that feels to me is playing with a lot of freedom. You know, they've had a bit of a rejuvenation this season. As Alex mentioned, they've been unbeaten for such a long time. And it's a nice mixture of players where, you know, it's not got the obvious big names that... we see some of the other contenders, but they have like the golden oldies like Alexandrina Cabral Barbosa, who's 37 and still going strong. And then the likes of Valeria Maslova, who was the top scorer for Brest, 9 goals, 23 years of age. Her and Audrey Dembele kind of leading this new generation of the team. I have to say, at the beginning of the season, I wouldn't have expected this team to be in the position they're in. Have they surprised you?
I don't know if I would use a word surprised, because as you said, they were also good last year. They were eliminated by Esbjerg in the playoffs, but they have been building the team for this, I think. And they, as you said, they have a good mixture. And I think that also they're, you know, when they won against Metz also in French championship, that also gave them a little bit of push throughout the season. And yeah, I think they are showing the good things that they can do in the European League, in the Champions League, sorry. But I think maybe they surprised a few, maybe with the scoring they had, because they were third in the group, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And they had 7 wins, three draws. So they were really, you know, they showed how good they are. And maybe that's just like their hard work comes to pay off this season, finally, for them. So I wouldn't say that I was super surprised with their game, because they really showed good strength and determination. So I think that just what it is this season for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't expect them maybe to be as good as they are, but you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that does is brought forward by Valeria Maslova's performances in the competition so far. She's the second top scorer in the overall competition, 91 goals, and she's only 23 years old. And I think there's something about like the Russian players that we're not seeing on the international stage. They almost don't get the same, you know, hype as players that are playing in European or world championships. And she's kind of fallen under the radar in the kind of global handball world and really taken this breast team kind of and leading it. It's really impressive to see.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I think that she's on 94 goals, if I'm not mistaken, because I don't think on the website it's super correct. I agree with you. I mean, she, for me, it's really nice to have her, Dmitrieva in Krim and Vyacharieva in Vipers. So as you said, we didn't have a chance to see those players on the big scene, as we don't have those clubs in competition anymore. So it's really nice to see them, and they're playing a really significant roles in their teams this season, and it's really nice to see that.
I think that's a nice segue to another game, the one that you weren't so impressed by, but I think it's really intriguing, this Krim and Chesime tie, because you know, Krim, I think they have impressed at times this season, and they have, you know, a group of players where you're kind of waiting for them to take that next step, coming up against a team in Chesime who have, you know, flattered to deceive over the years and always seem like they're about to make the breakthrough. I think last year was a real disappointment. But Niagu, Christina Niagu, kind of a blast from the past from her with 9 goals and 6 assists and a big win for Chesime in the end, 30-24. What do you think the kind of the key difference was between the two teams?
I want to say, like, for Krim, they had an amazing start. Just to go back on the start of the season, they had really, I thought they were going to be like one of the top teams in the group, how they started the game. And they just kind of went down through how the season went through. They just completely stopped playing. So I don't know what happened. They have Dragan Adjic as a coach who knows what he's doing. So I don't know what happened in the team, inside of the team. They had a good start. I mean, first few minutes, 10 minutes, I think it was 4-4, and then they just stopped playing. They started making mistakes, technical errors, counterattacks from Chesime. The goalkeepers weren't at the level they should be in this stage of the competition. So, you know, from 4-4 to 4-10 in just 3 minutes, completely everything just dropped down for Krim. They couldn't get back. They were trying, but they just couldn't. They looked like they cannot do anything. At least it looked like that to me.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's the age profile of this team slightly, you know, catching up with them. You know, they are relying on, you know, Radicevic, Barbara Lazovic, Alison Pino, even Barbara Earnhardt in goals. You know, these are all players in their late 30s at this stage and kind of the main players. And maybe as the season has gone on, you know, they just haven't been able to recover as much.
Yeah, maybe that doesn't work on Jovan Radicevic, who was also on top of the game, and she was
she
was in competition with Kristina, so she didn't want to stop at all. but I don't think that's actually maybe that. I just think that some things stopped working, maybe within the team. I mean, I don't know the whole story behind it, but they look like they're trying their best, all of them, but it just doesn't work. And, you know, I have a feeling like they have, like you said, Barbie Arenhart on the goal. They have, like, either great game or super bad game. They don't have, like, you know, perfect middle throughout the season. So maybe that's also one of the things that they should work on.
In contrast, they had Laura Glozer to come up against in between the posts for Chesime. 43%, marvelous performance. And, you know, when you have that at one end and you have Christina Niagu not wasting shots down the other end, which is always like, it seems to be whenever there's like this key loss for Chesime, you look at the stats and it's like 7 goals from 16 shots or 8 from 21 shots. It usually comes around this part of the season, but Christina looked fantastic. I mean, she really looks in good physical condition at the moment. And I just really like the look of this whole squad. Adrian Vasile has developed a team here where there maybe isn't as much reliance on Niagu on a regular basis, which is probably feeds into the more consistent performance. But, you know, Grassadi in there, Ingstad on the line, Kobylinska, they're all like solid players in and around the peak of their careers. And it looks like it's really looks difficult to imagine them collapsing at home in the second leg here. So it feels like with the team they have, they've pretty much got the job done.
Yeah, I think so too. But before that game, I actually talked with a few of my friends and we said that crucial could be Niagu. If she's going to have like 5 out of 12, as she sometimes does, then you can maybe have a level game. But if she's going to be on her game, you know, as she can be, and if they're going to have a goalkeeper with good defense, it's going to be a done deal. And that happened, actually. And I agree with you. There's no chance they will lose at home in the second leg. No way. I think they are through to the quarterfinals and they will face Mets.
Alex, you always you have a soft spot for Daria Dmitrieva. She had the Christina Niagu performance this time with 7 from 15. Do you see any way back for Super Daria and Krim?
I think unlikely. I think Daria has a lot on her shoulders with this Krim team, and it was working, as we said, at the start of the season. But just the amount of responsibility she has, again, both in attack and defence, playing that dual role is really, you know, it can take its toll. But I think, yeah, Chesime at home in Romania with a big crowd is almost a certainty. The surprise of the playoff round for me was actually Bietigheim winning against Ecast, because Ecast have really been a top team in the competition so far. You know, they just missed out on a direct qualification for the quarterfinals. They, you know, they're top of the group for most of the group stage. And they came up against a Bietigheim team, but lost away 29-27. Is that just kind of home advantage that allowed Bietigheim to get the win? Or should Ecast be a little bit worried?
I have to be honest, I was surprised with that result too. I thought Ecast going to do it without a problem. But I also think it's a little bit maybe a away game. They even though they had five games straight wins, they had some up and downs throughout the season, even though they haven't lost any of the games like with super huge margin or anything. But I think they will perform better at home and they can reach, you know, their goal. For me, it's really nice to see them at this level, because after 3 years of European League women reaching EHF finals, finally winning the EHF finals, to have this progress in the Champions League amongst top clubs, to be in this position, just to be in the playoffs, it's amazing for me. And I think Kasper Christensen really did an amazing job with the club. And I'm really hoping they will go further this season, because he is also leaving the club at the end of the season. So I really think both him and the club deserve better results this season. And I think they're going to be performing better at home. At least they have been this season.
You mentioned the European League there. I think it's a nice, like, it's classic European League encounter, this, to the
yes, two winners.
The 2022 winners and the 2023 winners, both battling it out at this level. But I mean, like, the Bietigheim I mean, this result actually didn't surprise me that much. I don't know why exactly. I mean, ICAS very, very strong, but I think you can lose by two away from home in a game like this. It's interesting to me that this was the only one where the home team got a win in it. I thought that might be the case, as we mentioned earlier, with a couple of the other games where the lower seed team could get a minor victory. You know, the way the two teams play, I think it's going to be a very similar game in Denmark next or later this week. I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any means. I reckon ICAS should get the job done, but Biedigheim have a solid team, particularly in their defensive capabilities. And also, speaking of golden oldies, like we were earlier, Karolina Kudlacz-Glotch, 39 years of age, still getting it done. It's fantastic. It's really, really impressive.
That's also maybe a little bit more experience in the top tier for the Biedigheim, you know. So we'll see.
Yeah, that could make life difficult for them. But, I mean, it would be a pity to see the likes of Jerzybkova and Fries get knocked out at this stage. They have more to offer this competition for sure.
Oh, well, they are all leaving the club. So, I mean,
exactly.
we have a lot of transfers for the next season from all those clubs that are in the playoffs. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting for all of them.
Yeah, it's actually so funny, as, you know, I was looking through the teams and each team has like 6 to 8 transfers. It's like someone took this playoff round and quarterfinal team, put all the names in a bag and just shook it around and picked them. It's a complete draft.
Ferencváros is going to have one of the best transfer windows when they were signing, and every day I was like, what? Who? They're like, they have Laura Glauser coming on the between the posts. They have Dimitrieva. So they have huge signings, actually. Yeah.
Well, another team that have every year managed to kind of reshuffle and still hit the same heights is Vipers, and they're still on track. You can say we had Anna-Veja Kareva on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and it's funny, she spoke about Lois Abing, one of the new players who came into the team this year, and how they've been trying to integrate her and unlock her. Well, it worked pretty well in this game, 13 goals for Lois Abing in the end, but it was difficult for Vipers and Debrecen against DVSC Scheffler. 26-22 down with just over 12 minutes to go, but then a 7-1 turnaround to snatch a win in the end by one goal.
For me, when it comes to Vipers this year, they really had their ups and downs. I mean, change of the team, of the coach, it wasn't really easy for them. And when I was watching the game, when the DFCS was in the lead, I was really thinking, oh my God, maybe we're going to have one more Hungarian team, you know? They surprised me when they made that 7-1 series to come back to win that game by one. I think it's a huge deal for them, even though I don't think they're going to be able to recreate their success from the former years this year. But maybe they're also building and making a base for the future again. So, I mean, you cannot expect them in 1 year to have such changes and do great things again all of a sudden. I mean, it's not a lot of clubs that I can actually do that.
With Vipers, it felt like they hit a rhythm, and Anna Vjakura was telling us that they gradually started figuring things out. And it felt like the same thing happened in the game, essentially, where they, you know, they're lost at times, but when they really get going, just the stars they have, the backcourt they have with Lois Abing and Vjakura is just... it's just unstoppable at times. And I think for me, I can't write them out essentially because of the players.
And you know what? I mean, we have to talk about Katrin Lunde between the posts. I mean, she's a legend. And this game, she had 11 saves at 30 something percent. And that's not her best day. Like, we have to remember that. Like, she has her best day. She can have 16, 17 saves and then you're done, because when she gets into your head with her saves, and I don't think that her team has that much experience. I mean, Nina Szabo and Planeta were doing a great thing in this first game, but I don't think they have, you know, maybe experience. I don't know how to put it exactly against experienced team as Vipers, you know. So I don't think they're going to have an easy time in Kristiansand in the reverse fixture at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, what Anna said in our previous podcast was that Vipers themselves were really happy that this game is on. You know, they need to gear themselves up and get practice. And I think this was kind of a perfect example of that, where, you know, if they'd gone to the quarterfinal and played like they did for the first 45 minutes against a Metz or an Odense, it could have been game over. But having this extra game really probably will help them in the long run. And I do think, you know, they'll be comfortable in that second leg. But yeah, good to see another Hungarian team in the mix.
As if they progress further and the eliminate Vipers, they will face Jer in the quarterfinals. So
yeah,
it's going to be probably a holiday again in Hungary for Hungarian fans. But also Vipers, I mean, we cannot say Vipers cannot go further and do something great, because we all know who they are. And, you know, it's one game, one day, and you never know what's going to happen, and especially those experienced teams.
Yeah, for sure. But you mentioned Djur and the potential opponents for Vipers in the quarterfinals. They've just had, you know, big changes. So Ulrik Kirkeli leaving.
I was surprised, I have to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, not as surprised. We know that Hungarians really cherish their competition, domestic competition and cup, and losing to FTC really hurt their feelings probably. But in Champions League, they were so great this season. Finishing first in the group with 11 wins, just two defeats. I was, you know, I don't know what happened, because how to put it, they have a player so good that sometimes I think they don't even need a coach. Maybe like they have really, when you look by the profiles, they have amazing players. So I was surprised to see them ditching the coach, and then now we have Per Johansson joining the team. So he's I think he's gonna have his debut in 5 days in domestic competition. So we're gonna see how does that look. But the real test is gonna be Champions League, probably.
You know, Per Johansson, very experienced coach. He's come into many clubs at kind of distressed times, and I think, as you said, yeah, like Justin, and had great success. And as you said, you know, this Djur team is so experience themselves, you know, they have the leaders in that team. You just need someone to make them work, and I think it could work. But what are your thoughts on what he can, will he change things, or will just kind of keep the team rolling?
I don't see what he needs to change. As I said, they have such prolific players that you don't need to change anything, if you ask me. Maybe, I mean, I'm the one who really loves good defense, and maybe that's the part they need to work a little bit more. They have good goalkeepers, and they have amazing back players and wing players, and their attack is amazing. Maybe the defense is something they need to work a little bit more. And from good defense always comes a good attack. That's my opinion. I'm the one who really miss the old handball with more strong defenses.
No, I'm with you here. Absolutely. Yeah, maybe a few of the kind of other potential quarterfinal matchups. Metz have been just really at the top of the game. They'll likely play Chesame, which is I think that's a really, really great matchup. You know, for Metz, do you see them kind of finally getting over the barrier, getting into the final four, getting into the final?
Well, I think that Metz, how to say, they've been good, and I think that this season I'm gonna talk about one player. I mean, they have great players, and they have Chloe Valentini, but for me, Sara Buktit on the line player, she overdid herself this season, and it's amazing. I love to see her play, because line players are not often in the spotlight, but she's so good this season, and they have been really on top of their game in the Champions League. But as I said, I think Brest won beat them in French Championship, so now they have a little bit more stressful days in the home competition. But I think if they're going to play against Chesema, which is more than obvious, probably, I think the Mets going to win. I don't know why, but they have well-structured team that's, been fighting for that final four. And I think they are really on a good track this year.
For sure. And Buchtied has been just a revelation. It's crazy to think that she's only 21 years old. It's like France already have Pauletta Foppa as an incredible young line player. And then they just have this kind of superstar in behind, which has really worked for them. And also Hatidou Sakho in goals for Mets can just have these, 17, 18 save performances.
I think really that she's, 37-36% save efficiency in Champions League, which is extraordinary for the goalkeeper, especially today with this fast handball with strong shots where defenses are not always in the spotlight. So that's just amazing for the goalkeeper.
What's left is kind of two big Danish powerhouses, Odense and Team Esbjerg. Odense will play the winner of IKAS Bietigheim. So that's that could be a Danish matchup. I think in Denmark, it's really been, IKAS have fought against Odense, but Esbjerg has been ahead. Esbjerg have just been the team. So what are your thoughts on Odense going into this quarterfinal?
They've been obviously playing amazing in the Group A. They were the second team in the Group A. I don't know how many losses they had, just three or two, I'm not sure, on the table. But they've been playing, I don't know how to put it, but steady handball. They've been, good throughout the season without any, ups and downs in that terms. For me, they're a really strong team. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how it's in Denmark when they meet together in Danish championship. But I think if we're going to have Danish duel in the quarterfinals, it's going to be a completely different story for me. I think if IKAS manage to get there, they will be determined to show their best. I'm sure of that. I'm going to have an amazing game.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean, I know that Esbjerg is almost untouchable in Denmark. I think they're leading in their domestic championship by a lot of points. IKAS is the second, Odense is now third. So anything can happen.
But I think with Team Esbjerg, who will play the winner of Brest FTC, again, that's a huge game. We're going to see two very good teams match up against each other. But Team Esbjerg just looks so good. Just looks so good.
I think that we don't have to even talk about them because they've been for a few years now just perfect team. Perfect. But they've been playing so good, so nice with their classic Scandinavian, play. And, you know what stars they have in the team. And I really don't know what to say about, Esbjerg to talk about them. And we all know who they are and what they're capable of and what can they provide. And, they have amazing Henny Reistad, who's been one of the top scorers throughout the years, in the last few years.
I suppose my question with Team Esbjerg, we know that they're just incredible. They have the best player in the world. But it is kind of Jesper Jensen's last year with the team. And, despite being pretty much the best team over the last couple of years in the Champions League, every time they've got to the Final Four, they've just hit that wall. What do you think needs to happen for them to actually break that, semi-finals wall that they have?
It's like what we always said about Cologne. It's the same with the Budapest. You have that magic and you never know what's going to happen. So when it comes to the Final Four, it's completely new games. And it's not that often that someone is really, so great that you cannot say, oh, they're going to win for sure and go to the finals. But for Esbjerg, I don't know. They've been, as I said, they've been playing so good. last season, season before, this season also, I don't know what's missing. I really don't know, because they have a great team. I don't know what happens on the Final Four, but up until the Final Four, they play amazing. It's going to be interesting if they're going to have match up with Brest, if Brest eliminates FTC, because they eliminated Brest already last season in the playoffs. So maybe Brest is going to be extra motivated against them in the quarterfinals. So it's not going to be easy for them, especially in France, I believe.
Yeah, I think that could be potentially the game of the quarterfinals. If it's FTC or Brest that get through, that will be a huge one. That was a quick whirlwind around the Champions League. So thanks, Daniela, for taking that. Is there any final thoughts on the Champions League? How have you found it so far? What in terms of standard, level, excitement?
I think it's great. I think fans could enjoy it. And I think that women's handball is really developing in good direction. And we have some really young, I can say young stars coming on the big doors to the handball just to enjoy it. And I think after this season, we're going to have new faces in new clubs. And I think that's one of the most interesting things, as you said, about transfers. Someone took all the players and shook things up and just started pulling out the names from the head. So it's going to be interesting to see some of those players who had a major role in their clubs in the new colors next season, and how they're going to fight until the end of this season to see what they can make and reach this season. I think it's good, and I like underdog stories. If we have underdogs, we don't have huge underdogs, but I always like to see if ICA's going to reach, you know, and have stories like that at the end of the season.
As you said, there's so many players that are transferring. It will really be a challenge for all of the coaches to actually motivate them. I think, you know, a lot of players don't need that much motivation, but that could be a kind of decider of the future. Daniela, thanks so much for coming on and speaking about the Women's Champions League. Hope you are well rested for the next couple of rounds and enjoy the handball.
Thank you for having me, and we hope we're going to have new games to enjoy this weekend and new excitement. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you to Daniela for a great recap of the Women's Champions League. It's really crunch time. You could really feel it with the playoff round and a real jumble of, you know, players and teams after this season. So I think we talked about some of the potential quarterfinal matchups, and there's some really big ones coming up there. There's real quality in the Women's Champions League this season throughout. And we'll have to see how it shapes up. I'm pretty excited for the games this weekend. Budapest, again, the place to be. There really is a risk that Budapest may not have a Hungarian team this year. Mm. I think of all years, this is one where there's no guarantees, as we have FTC and DVSC both down after the first leg, and Jure to play Vipers in the quarterfinal if they get through. Again, a big matchup, so maybe might not have the wildness of last year, but I'm sure it'll be some top teams.
Kind of spoiled last year with FTC and Jure making it through. There's only been one Final Four since the women's Final Four was introduced where there was no Hungarian team in it. And yeah, it was still a nice event, absolutely. I mean, it was in a smaller arena, like trying to fill out 20,000 seats when there's no Hungarian team will be tricky, but it's a nice path to Budapest, I have to say. And looking at what we've seen in the first leg there, I have a feeling it's probably going to be Vipers Jura, as you mentioned there. It could be an all-Danish clash in another quarterfinal, Odense and Ikast. And Esbjerg against Brest, and then Metz against CSM Bucuresti. So yeah, that's some very tasty ones and very, very difficult ones to call if they are the four quarterfinals. Often, you know, there seems like there's some big favorites in there, but particularly with what's happened to Jure, with Kirkley being given the boot, and with Vipers, you know, as we talked to Anna Vekareva a couple of weeks ago, maybe hitting form at the right time of the season could be a tricky contest for them. But still, another leg to go before we see the exact quarterfinal lineups.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks, everyone, for joining. Make sure to sign up to our Patreon if you want to listen to our chat around the Olympic qualifiers and the exciting action that took place there. We'll be talking about Sigurdsson and his almighty Croatian team and the opportunities coming up. So definitely not one to miss.
Goodbye.